Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KCoRadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to Let's Talk About It, your wellness radio. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number here at the station is area code 760-337-8874.
How long are we going to keep giving out area codes before we just kind of go back to the old seven-digit thing?
Well, as long as I still forget to dial, you know, even calling my sister's house. So
yeah,
that gets me really...
a contest to see how many times you've heard that annoying message.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It's awful.
And it doesn't start right away. It's like it rings.
It rings. Like, oh, how come she's not answering? And then you get that message. Yes. So...
yeah, but they had to re-record it because it wore out. It's like the old days of the records where you play it over and over and it's finally gone. They digitally wore out that message several times.
Well, good morning, Scott.
Good morning. Welcome. How are you, Maria?
Good.
Okay, let's kick this thing off because it's a fun show. Hey, 760-337-8874. And you may want to holler and get your friends online and get everybody listening today.
We're going to dismiss all these myths. And we're just going to get facts today.
Yeah, we have gone up to the top of the mountain, and we have medical people in the room today to talk about this fall's latest fad and fashion and things to be scared of, the H1N1 virus.
And the seasonal flu.
We're
going to be talking about
absolutely.
That. What are the symptoms? How do you prevent it? Questions about the vaccines, the regular flu, seasonal flu, the H1N1 flu shot, all those good things.
So if you're one of those people who's on the edge of your chair and have been now for several weeks because you just really want to know and understand more about this potential plague menacing us, well, listen in because we've got Bruce Kuhn. He's a registered nurse and he's also a program supervisor too at the Public Health Department. Bruce, good morning.
Good morning.
How long have you been at Public Health? Let's start with you.
In federal, I have been at Public Health in Imperial County for 8 years.
Hmm.
And you came from?
I came from San Diego. Just before I came to...
We could tell because you look a little older than 8 years old. So.
Yeah, I'm a little older than 8 years old. So at UCSD, just before I came to Public Health, I worked in clinical research.
Oh, nice. Wonderful. What took you that direction? Just curious.
Clinical research?
Public health setting.
Clinical research is a great place to understand the science behind diseases and how to come up with cures and treatments for different illnesses. But it doesn't provide a lot of opportunity to work directly with the patients, directly with the public. And that's the major focus of public health is work with the public. So that's why I was drawn back to it.
Welcome. We're feeling fortunate to have you in our community. That's cool to get somebody who feels a commitment to a community.
Okay.
Strong enough to kind of move down here. And how many summers have you had here?
I've owned my property up by Ocotillo for 10 years.
Oh, there you go. There you go. So you're a tweener.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I like it.
Yeah.
Good. Well, welcome aboard. Now, so where should we jump in here? Should we start with the big picture of seasonal flu, or should we just right to the punchline of H1N1?
Seasonal flu
is a good place to start because that's what people are familiar with. This is what we deal with year
mm-hmm.
after year. After
oh, yeah, yeah. I've had a few really, really good seasonal flus in my life.
Most people have. And the thing to remember about it is for most people, it's not a major illness. Mm-hmm. We get sick for a couple of days a week and then we get over it. And the same thing generally happens with people who get H1N1. H1N1 is just a different type of influenza. All it is.
So we've got this world of flus, and there's flu. Why in the wintertime? Why do they just, is that like, you know, like baseball season, but for flus?
Well, H1N, any type of influenza comes out in the wintertime because of the cyclical nature of the virus. When the bodies are colder, when people are more susceptible to respiratory illnesses, that's when influenza recognizes a weakness in the system in a person and has the ability to spread and to go throughout the population more easily. It's just during the wintertime is when respiratory illnesses are more prevalent.
Why is that? I mean, why is it that that old...
Is it evolutionarily smart?
No, grandma or old wives tale, you know what? You know, that's don't walk on cold floors. You're going to get sick. Make sure you cover yourself.
Well, I really do think it's an evolutionary process. Mm-hmm. As you know, our winter in the Northern Hemisphere is December, January, February. That's the coldest month. That's when we're going to get cold. That's when our respiratory system is going to be really, really dry. It's going to make it much easier for any kind of an infection, a virus or bacterial infection, to get in. You all heard about H1N1, and people were concerned about what was happening in the Southern Hemisphere during our summer, because in the Southern Hemisphere, South America, South Africa, Australia, it's their winter time. So traditionally, influences have evolved to be strongest in winter months, in the colder months.
So do they go dormant in our summer, or do they just kind of, I mean, do they fly down to Brazil and hang out there?
Well, I guess you could say they fly because they are spread from human to humans, and humans travel. We don't stop going to Australia in the wintertime because we're worried about getting the flu.
So I get it. So they kind of follow the proper temperature and humidity conditions in like a wave from person to person almost.
This is a farming community. Think about a virus kind of like a crop. There are some crops that grow better in the summer than they do in the winter. So in our summertime here, we're going to grow those crops in our field, and those crops are going to thrive and they're going to do fine. But in the wintertime, they're going to die. That doesn't mean that there aren't seeds out there that's not going to get replanted next spring or next fall or next summer. But they're not going to grow in the winter. And the same thing happens with viruses. They just are engineered genetically to survive during certain times of the year better than others.
Now, out of all of God's critters or whatever, viruses are the ones that really mutate fairly rapidly so that you get really different flavors from year to year. Mm-hmm. Is that how this works?
Generally,
they've been mutating.
Yeah, viruses do mutate very quickly. If you think about things like HIV mutated very rapidly. Fortunately, the avian flu has not mutated as rapidly as scientists were anticipating, so it has not evolved to become a pandemic, whereas H1N1 just kind of showed up out there on the outer fringes of the radar and evolved quickly enough to become a human influenza. Fortunately, it evolved into a fairly non-lethal, fairly benign, not a very serious influenza-type infection. The typical seasonal influenza that we normally deal with from year to year can kill, just in our country, anywhere from 30,000 to 35,000 people a year. We haven't approached those numbers yet with H1N1 since it happened in April to now.
We might get there in flu season, but no more. Not looking that way.
And the thing is that as I drive, I listen to the radio, public radio, and they always mention, it's been 35 people, 32 people, 34 people that died in San Diego County of H1N1. It's really hard, not to make you feel that, this is going to be kind of like they're trying
to. We're paying special attention, aren't we?
They're paying special attention to it.
Well, think about it. It makes sense that we would be paying special attention to H1N1. It's new. Mm-hmm. You all are in media. You know what is new is what people want to hear about. Mm-hmm. The message we need to get to the people to understand is H1N1 may be a new strain, but it is still influenza. It's still the same flu, like the seasonal flu, the regular flu that people may have got their vaccinations for already this year. And in fact, the seasonal flu that we gave out this year and most years generally contains an H1N1 strain. It is different than the new strain, but there is generally an H1N1 component in there. So it's not even that new. It's just the way it came out in the media, the way it was tracked.
Looks like it just kind of came into
brand new.
Yeah,
brand new.
It kind of jumped out of the periphery into the mainstream very quickly. And, of course, public health officials as well as the media and as well as the general public want to be concerned about anything that's new.
Mm-hmm. So it's really just a retooled Chevy Nova? I mean, when did H1N1 emerge as a different strain a long time ago in history? Is this traceable back to any particular year? Or
Well,
because you mentioned that the regular flu, or because, you know, a lot of, I think 14,000 people got vaccinated with the regular flu. And you said that it had a component of H1N1 in it already? So it must have been around. Yeah.
You're talking about 14,000 people got vaccinated?
Here.
Oh, in this county?
Okay.
That's about right. And the H1N1 component has been a part of seasonal flu for a while. You've got to remember that that this type of flu has been seen before. The most recent was in the 70s, the outbreak what was called swine flu at mm-hmm. the time is an H1N1 type virus similar to the one we have now. And the 1918 pandemic was also a type of swine flu. So this type of flu has been around for years. Mm-hmm. The difference is the genetic pieces that make up this particular strain are a little different than the H1s and H1N1s that have been out there before, or the other type mm-hmm. Of flu viruses that have been circulating before. That's the only difference.
A little different means that my body, having gone through the flu season of the mid-70s, might kind of recognize it and be able to combat it more easily than somebody's body who hadn't been through that?
That's one of the theories that has been thrown out there. There's no strong evidence one way or the other to say that that's true or not true. But if a person has consistently been vaccinated against influenza and they come across a new influenza, there's every reason to believe that in some small part, at least, there may be some kind of immunity or resistance conferred to help the body fight off this new type, even if it's not specifically for that. But like I said, there's been no studies, no evidence to prove that yet. Okay.
Usually they gave out these at-risk populations. You know, kids, little toddlers, infants.
For H1N1?
Yes, for H1N1. Pregnant women. Older adults and adults with underlying conditions. Why is that? Why is that that they're giving that to that still special population? Why the kids? Why the toddlers?
Because, as I said before, H1N1 is new. Mm. It's a different strain, so it affects the population differently than the regular seasonal flus that we've seen before. Seasonal flu generally attacked people who had weakened immune systems and were elderly. Those are the populations at most risk for the flu that we've been vaccinating for in past seasons. H1N1 have evolved to be most dangerous to small kids mm-hmm. and to pregnant moms. And to people with weakened immune systems. So those are the populations. Those are the special needs populations, the first priority populations that we're going to vaccinate first. H1N1 is developed like the regular flu. It is a long process. So it's coming out, the vaccine is being delivered in batches.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done here in this county is prioritize based on the groups. And let me reiterate those groups. It's small children. It's, by children, I mean up to age 24. That is the population.
So you're saying also like the young adults?
Young adults. It's children and young adults, people with really strong immune systems that have a strong reaction to this particular strain and are the most at risk to have some very serious side effects. Next to that, pregnant mothers seem to be particularly susceptible, and the people with underlying chronic medical conditions, especially those kinds of conditions that would weaken their immune systems. Our senior citizens this year seem to be not quite as susceptible to this virus as the seasonal virus. Mm-hmm. So they're not in the highest risk group.
Oh, okay.
Unless they have chronic underlying conditions that are going to weaken their immune system, that are going to make them more susceptible, things like bronchitis, things like chronic liver disease, things like severe diabetes, things that are going to make them more susceptible to viral infections. Otherwise, for the seniors, this is a good year for H1N1 anyway. Now, seasonal flu is still out there, but H1N1 is... although it's a risk to the population in general, it's a higher risk to younger, healthier people.
All right. We're here with Bruce Kuhn. He's from the Public Health Department. We're going to take a short break. This is Let's Talk About It, sponsored by Behavioral Health. We'll be right back with more show.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
And welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio with your hosts, Scott and Maria. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874. And we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health.
And our guest today is Bruce Kuhn, and he's a program supervisor for public health. And we're talking about all things flu-related since it's the beginning of flu season. And it's a special year in flu season because we've got the seasonal flu, which is whatever that is. Plus, we've got H1N1, which has, you know, been grabbing headlines and generating these waves of, this is the El Centro, children's immunization thing over at Kennedy Middle School. Were you out there, Bruce? Did you cover that one?
I was at the one. Well, I was at both of them actually. The one that we did ourselves, when we were in the working with the school district, and our nurses did the shots, and then I was also there as an advisor for El Centro Regional. Not that they need our advice, but we wanted to be on hand in case they had any questions.
Nice. I was at the El Centro School District one. I was impressed at the organization and systematic way that it was done, because when I walked up and got in line, I thought, oh, my goodness, here we go. Major time commitment. And it went really smoothly, and it was amazing. And, you know, aside from that moment of trauma with all those kids crying right in the shot area, and, you know, the rest of it was pretty much okay.
One thing Imperial County has tried to do very early on is to be prepared for disasters, including being able to mass vaccinate or mass prophylax people. So we've been working for a number of years with our partners like El Centro Regional and Pioneers Memorial, and the larger healthcare organizations like Clínicas de Salud, to be prepared. And so these exercises now with the H1N1 are just another opportunity for us to work with our partners and to use the skills that we
and then reflect some of that planning that you've done ahead of time.
Right, to show the positive effects of all the planning that and forethought has been put into it.
There are advantages to living in a small county sometimes, and that's one of them. That, you know, you've got 7 or 8 people who are the lead administrators of healthcare. And you guys can, you know, and you and your minions, you and your people like us that are program supervisors and management level, we can talk and get things done sometimes a lot faster than you can in a more complex area like, you know, San Diego or something.
It does help to be part of a smaller community.
Yeah. Neat. So as Maria kind of mentioned, 14,000, and is that H1N1 or is that the seasonal flu vaccine that we've got vaccinated so far in this county?
Well, I wasn't here when you were talking with Maria. I believe the 14,000 is the H1N1 that's been done so far.
Okay, and how many people have gotten seasonal flu vaccines this year?
Oh, it's roughly the same number, about 12,000. I don't have the exact number, so I can't really be quoted as an expert on that because I don't have it in front of me.
Okay,
it's roughly about.
Okay, that's a ballpark figure to kind of kick into the topic. So are the people who've been vaccinated, are they now safe? Are they flu, you know, can they walk around oblivious to all of the other health concerns and just say, ha, got my shot, I'm cool?
No medication, especially no vaccine, is 100% effective. Some people who get vaccinated will still end up getting sick with a respiratory illness.
But mild.
It could happen. It could be a different strain, and the symptoms could be a lot milder.
Milder, probably. But there's a lot of people. I know we have around probably more than 150,000 people here in the county. I think we have close to almost 180 around there.
No, I was counting last weekend. It was like 150. No, yeah.
But there's a lot of people that don't want to get shot, vaccinated, because they have these myths or they think that if you get the flu shot, you're going to get sick. You get worse, actually.
All right. Let me backtrack just a quick second to finish of the first thing we talked about when we were talking about are people going to be safe if they get the flu. For the most part, yes. I only brought up the fact that no vaccine is 100% effective because there are going to be those exceptions. Now, to get back to your question, you're bringing up the concern that a lot of people have that you can get sick from the flu vaccine, and that's not really the case. Flu vaccines have been manufactured for decades now, and they're produced under very safe conditions. And what's actually happened is they found ways to get the necessary parts out of the structure of the vaccine, so that the body will be able to recognize the flu virus when it gets into our body and fight it off without getting the actual infectious agents of the flu virus.
And then they've done that in a way that and is maintained safe chemically and other things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all done in laboratory conditions. Most of the flu vaccine that's given out in this country is produced either here or in Europe. And the manufacturing process, like I said, is a long one, but it's a very safe one. And let me just reiterate that the parts of the vaccine that are brought out are things like the proteins on the capsule mm-hmm. of the virus itself that contains the genetic material inside of it. Not that genetic material, not the stuff.
So you just take the hood ornament off the front of the car and
right.
attach it to something else, and then they see, you know, your defense system sees the hood ornament and says, oh, look, there's a Mustang.
That's it. It's like giving a tank operator a Mercedes hood ornament and saying, okay, shoot all of these. You're not giving him a whole Mercedes. You're just giving him that portion to recognize that it is a Mercedes. Mm-hmm. So every time a Mercedes comes into view, we can fight it off. The same thing with the virus. The vaccine gives the body the ability to recognize the virus without actually infecting people with that virus.
Well, I'm one of those people who always kind of just wants to stop and let things make sense to me. And I think for me, the standard of safety on this would be, you know, how many people who work for the labs that manufacture and how many people that work in the healthcare industry get shots themselves. And I'm guessing that you guys all get it and don't even think twice about its safety because you know with almost total certainty that it is safe.
People at the most of the people at the public health department don't have any problems.
Yeah.
I've been vaccinated for the seasonal flu and now H1N1 pretty much every year.
Mario, could you dim the lights? I think he's glowing.
No. If I was glowing, it might be being too close to San Onofre, not from getting a flu vaccine.
Nice.
The thing we need to clarify here, though, is about what the so-called live viruses, the flu mist.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is called a live virus, it is what is called an attenuated virus. That means it's been crippled. So that portion of it that makes it infectious has been damaged. So what the body will recognize is a bigger hood ornament. Instead of mm-hmm. taking the Mercedes hood ornament, you're giving the whole Mercedes hood with some parts of the engine.
But it's like cash for clunkers. Yeah. You've damaged the engine and it won't run.
It won't run.
My daughter got that one.
Right. So it's not going to
mist.
Right. It's not going to give the person the flu. It's just going to give them exposure to more parts of the actual flu virus itself than what you would mm-hmm. give them the shot.
Now, can people get both and be okay? The seasonal and the H1.
Sure. That's actually recommended.
Vanilla and chocolate.
Mm-hmm. The only considerations are live viruses because the immune system is geared up to react to live viruses differently than to a shot. If a person gets the seasonal mist, the flu mist, in the nose, then they need to wait 30 days before getting another live virus or getting the H1N1 mist. But you can get the mist of one type and a shot of the other type, both on the same day, no problem. Or one mist mm-hmm. today and a shot tomorrow, not a problem.
It's the only way to get both the nasals.
It's only if it's both the nasals or other live viruses mm-hmm. like measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, those types of things. Those are the other types of live viruses that we want to know about so that we would know which vaccine would be appropriate for the child at that point. So that's the only real consideration. It's you can get H1N1 and you can get regular seasonal influenza together as long as they're both
shots
or as long as
one is different.
Yeah, one is, they're both not the mist. Mm-hmm. The mist can't be given on the same day at the same time.
Okay.
Learn something new today.
So, Mario, play Misty for me. We're here with Bruce Kuhn. He's from the Public Health Department, Imperial County Public Health Department. And we're talking all things H1N1 and seasonal flu. It's 8:15, so if you've got questions that you want for Bruce today, 760-337-8874 is the phone number. Give us a call.
The question is, what about us, the adults? you know, the ones, not the young adults, you know, anybody that's age 25 and over, how can they get the H1N1? You know, you have the public health at the season of flu. They had clinics, you know, at the mall, at Calexico, at Bali, and then they had some for senior centers. And what about the H1N1? Is public health planning to do a health clinic for us, you know, over 25?
Well, what we have been doing is taking the vaccine as it comes in the allotments and the shipments and prioritizing our clinics to the highest risk populations first. As we get through those high risk populations, we will move into the lower risk populations as more vaccines.
So we're waiting for more vaccines. Right. I mean, if we had unlimited vaccines at this point, you'd throw the doors wide open and say, come in and guess.
Most likely we would have, yes. But we have a limited supply now, so we have to reach the high risk groups first.
Prioritize it, yes.
And when you think about it, we're coming. We just got through with Thanksgiving. We're getting ready to come into the holiday season where people are going to have a lot of breaks. Families are traveling. People are mixing. This is the time of year when we want our vulnerable populations.
Time of year when you don't want to fly in an airplane.
Well, we want people as protected as possible because we are going to travel during the holidays.
And all those strange germs that you're not used to because they live in a different neighborhood.
Exactly. Exactly.
So when is going to... For that risk population, are the kids have been receiving at their schools. Is public health going to have one for an H1N1?
We are going to have one. We haven't
for the at risk.
For the at risk, we haven't set the exact date and time, so I can't give that now. But it will when that is set, then we will be letting everybody.
Oh, you guys post on. You guys have got a website and everything too.
We have a website and we have blast email lists. And we have a lot of partners in the media and in the community that we work with to get the message out so that the public will know when it's time for them to come and to get the shot based on their risk group.
Another question is side effects. Is there any side effects for, you know, the regular flu shot, seasonal flu, or the H1N1? You know, because I take my daughter to get vaccinated, they always have, even for regular vaccinations, there's some risk to it.
Wow. Transient and minor are the words that spring to my mind.
You're getting a shot. And when you get a shot, especially a shot like this, it's designed to take the local cells where the shot's administered and turn them into little antibody factories. That local reaction, it may hurt a little bit. It may cause some local redness, maybe a local swelling. Some people complain of headache and occasionally low-grade fever. But that means that the vaccine is working.
Mm.
The injectable vaccine is injected into the muscle and is designed to turn those muscle cells where it's injected into little factories that produce the protection we need against the vaccine.
No wonder my arm was hurting for the next 2 days.
Yeah, it was working.
Right. It hurts for a couple of days because the vaccine is doing what it's supposed to do and your body is reacting to it appropriately and building up immunity. So that if you get exposed to the virus, you're not going to get sick or you're not going to get as sick.
Okay. Now here's my question. Now, the thing is to me is there's over 100,000 people living in our community that haven't had either flu shot. So they're going to run the risk. You know, they're riding their white knuckling this thing out. Unless they choose to get the shot sometime in the future because they heard the show and now they're okay, fine, I'm getting a shot, whatever. What can we do from a public health standpoint? What can we do to minimize the risk of spreading and sharing germs and stuff with each other in this time of year?
Well, let me just reiterate. Although we are public health and we encourage everybody to get vaccinated against preventable diseases like influenza, we know it's a personal choice as well, and some people are not going to want to. The recommendation is to do it because the science is there. It will protect us. It will help. Protect the vulnerable populations if more of the population is vaccinated. Now, what we can do, whether or not we get vaccinated, to help prevent the spread of influenza-like illnesses or any illnesses, is to make sure we wash our hands. Mm-hmm. Wash our hands with hand gel. If we're touching surfaces, also wash our hands with just plain soap and water like you use when you're washing your dishes. a lot of dishwashing liquid now is antibacterial. You wash with that, you're going to help prevent infection. When you're going to cough, make sure you cover your cough. And by cover our cough, I mean take a tissue, a paper towel, a...
Never in your hands.
Never in your hands. Or in, put it, cough into the crook of your elbow.
You know what's one of the coolest things in the world
yes.
now? My 8-year-old daughter is absolutely a crook of the elbow cougher.
My daughter,
and
my 3-year-old.
Like a generation has now passed, and now these people have been properly trained in cough
yes.
etiquette, while the rest of us are like,
I know,
oops,
yeah.
too late.
My husband, he goes, he's still, because he was never taught that.
Because
when
you have the urge to cough, you've got like a tenth of a second to figure out where it's going to go.
Yeah, so he does in the hand, cover his hand, and she says, no, Papa, like this, and she shows me.
She's got the right message.
Yeah.
But if a person does have to cough into their hand because they just can't grab a handkerchief or a napkin or a tissue fast enough, get up and get to the restroom and wash your
hands
as quickly
exactly.
as possible. If you have to touch the door, then go come back and wipe it with a sandy wipe.
Mm-hmm.
To go ahead and get those germs off.
So typical hand washing frequency, though, for someone who's like not walking around with symptoms, how often should that person be washing their hands just in terms of a prophylactic?
Well, I guess it really depends on how much they interact with the public and are out in the public. If you're in your house and you keep your house pretty clean, you don't have to wash your hands every 10 or 15 mm-hmm. minutes. But if we're working in a healthcare setting or a clinic and we're dealing with patients, we want to keep our hands clean between patients. If you're working in a bank
mm-hmm.
and you're dealing, handing money in your talking
so any
to
sort
people,
of any sort of human service job,
any type of human service
sales
job,
sales or anything,
constant contact with people, it's a good idea to fairly frequently throughout the day keep the hands clean, keep the work surfaces clean, because people are going to put their
mm-hmm.
credit card down, they're going to put their wallet down, they're going to put their money down, and if your surface is clean and your hands are clean, you're not going to get you're not going to give to them anything you have, and you're not going to pick up something that they put down on the counter.
Well, I think if people wash their hands as they should and use the proper etiquette of when coughing or sneezing, either in a tissue or on your sleeve, the crook of the elbow, I don't think the virus would spread as much.
The other thing that helps to prevent the spread of the virus is for people to stay home when they're sick. It's very important. We don't want to miss work. We don't want to miss school. We need the money, or we don't want our boss to be mad at us.
We got important stuff to do.
Our kid has a test today. But what's actually happening is we're going and making even more people sick. So if we go to work and we make our coworkers sick, our boss is going to lose even more money because now half of the workforce is sick when we could have just stayed home. And the same thing with the children. If one kid goes to school sick and he makes half the class sick, then all of those children are missing out on learning
mm-hmm.
opportunities. So it's better to keep, if a person is sick or if a person's children are sick, stay home for a while.
Oh, but again, this is kind of an individual choice thing. But from a public health standpoint, when are you sick as opposed to not sick? I mean,
Well, the symptoms of influenza-like illness, respiratory illnesses, are things like high fever, cough, some with H1N1, some nausea, some
mm-hmm.
vomiting.
So is fever the trigger? If you're running a fever, is that the one
that's
where you say, okay, I'm pulling it today?
That's
yeah,
it.
Fever is
fever,
a really
yeah.
good first marker
mm-hmm.
to start with. Now, when we're giving the vaccine, let me use that as an example. When we're administering the vaccine, we ask people, how are you feeling today? If a person has a fever up to 100, then that's considered a mild reaction.
Mm-hmm.
It could even be related to allergies or a mild illness, that they're a cold or something
yeah.
that they're having at the
okay.
moment.
Okay.
But if they have a temperature over 100, like say 101 or above, that's considered much more
their body's trying to cook something.
Mm-hmm.
Right, a much more acute illness. We think it's better to wait, get the shot later. The same kind of criteria could be used for when a person should stay home. If they have symptoms that appear to make them infectious, they're coughing, they're sneezing, they've got runny eyes, they're dragging themselves from the bed to the table
mm-hmm.
to try to get breakfast, they shouldn't go to work or go to school.
Is there also
stay home, don't infect people,
a cost benefit to managing your immune system? I mean, is that part of this puzzle that when you are run down, when you do have a cold, It may be a good idea to just get some rest or something so that you don't put yourself in a position where you're more susceptible to bigger illnesses.
Right. Believe it or not, we can't tough out an illness. We can say, okay, we think that we can be Superman and we're gonna do our normal everyday activities.
That's why they call it walking pneumonia, because you still walk.
Because you're still walking around, but you've still got pneumonia. If we don't conserve our energy, if we don't focus on giving our body the resources it needs, like rest, proper nutrition, over-the-counter treatments for fever, then we're going to stay sicker longer. And then we're,
and in the meantime, be susceptible, because the immune system's already tied up doing something.
Be susceptible to secondary
for
infections.
Secondary.
Are there dietary health, sleep considerations, exercise, stuff like that?
Well, if a person is used to exercising vigorously every day or every other day, going to the gym or something, they want to cut back a little bit as far as diet goes. People need to, when they're ill, they need to eat
lots of white sugar.
No.
It tastes good. Come on, Bruce.
No. Well, you eat the white sugar.
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend to people that that they, you know, follow a proper diet. Get plenty of fruits and vegetables, some nice broth that has some protein in it to help a person recover faster.
Chicken soup.
Mm. Eh? It works.
Liquid water.
Lots of water, lots of fluids, because when we're fighting off an infection, not only do we need that fluid to help our body flush out the toxins and the infectious agents, but we also are losing fluid from the fever. The fever makes the body run hotter, so we're losing a lot of liquid that way. So we need to keep up. We need to drink more, particularly water, but more fluids.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we do have that 101, 102 degree fever, should we seek medical care?
Well, I think the best advice to give people is follow the same rules that they would have followed during any other normal season. And if we're talking about a fever with influenza-like illness, like we talked about this in April, May, mm-hmm. June, when we were dealing with the first H1N1 outbreak here in the county. And the recommendation basically is to follow the same guidelines that you would have used before. You don't have to be different about it. The people know their own bodies. They know when they've had enough and they've got to go to someone else and do something about it. And that's the guidelines they need to use. It's different for me than it is for you.
Mm.
I might need to go see the doctor sooner than you, or I might need to see the doctor later. So it's difficult to say, well, if your fever gets to 102, you've got to go to the doctor. Or if you are sick for 3 or 4 days, you've got to go to the doctor. It's a personal decision that people need to make based on their own life experience dealing with illnesses they've been exposed to in the past.
Mm. What about for kids that aren't as good of a recorder, perhaps, and don't have that experience that we're
And their immunity is not as built up.
Well, it's always a good idea for parents when they're concerned about their children's health to take them to the pediatrician. Call the pediatrician and say, this is what's going on. Should I bring him in to your office? Should I wait for an appointment? Do you want me to go to the urgent care center? Children are special needs. As adults, we can look out for ourselves. But you're right. Children are special needs, so parents need to follow the same guidelines they would before when making decisions about when to call the pediatrician or when to take them to urgent care. But definitely children with influenza-like illness need to be monitored by the parents and taken care of, and then at the appropriate time, they may want to call the pediatrician.
But they still have to do their chores.
No, I think they're going to have to be, they'll be excused from that.
That's up to the parents. The thing I'm stressing here is there are a lot of personal decisions that are made because influenza is an illness like any other illness, and most people, by the time they even become young adults, have dealt with illnesses before. We know what we can tolerate. We know what we can't tolerate. We know when we need additional help and when we don't. So if we follow those same guidelines, we'll be all right.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming aboard today, first of all. Thank you. Because this is fun. You know your stuff like I know my stuff. So it was fun
getting
really balanced information.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to get the message out there so that the community can be safer and healthier.
Well, and special bonus on that, because this show does go up on podcast in about a week and a half at the KXO website. So all you have to do is find your Let's Talk About It link and click on that. And Bruce's talk to us today will be available.
Recorded.
So you can use this as public health information for anybody who didn't catch the show today or you want to hear this or has questions about any of the influenza-related stuff. So. Mm-hmm.
That's great to know. That's a great resource.
Yeah.
You can share it with your mom and family, too, Bruce, by the way. So.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. One thing I wanted to make sure that the public knows about is our flu prevention hotline number.
Yeah.
We do have a hotline number for people to call in if they have questions about seasonal or H1N1.
I've used it.
And we do have qualified people who answer the phone 24 hours and can answer people's questions.
Okay, 3:30 in the morning, I'm calling them.
They will answer. They may not appreciate it, but they'll answer. Because it is our job, and we want to be there for the public when they need the help. So our number is 760-482-4968. The people who answer the phone can answer in English or in Spanish.
Great.
Thank you so much for coming aboard today.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
And thank you all for the opportunity.
I wish you good health in this winter season.
And good health to you, too.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. Join us again next week. I hope you have a great weekend and enjoy the season.
Be safe. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.